Kachofish.
So this week is Parshat Truma, and Parshat Truma, the Sedra Truma in Exodus, is about the making of the sanctuary and how, in order to make the sanctuary, everyone dedicates gifts to the sanctuary, and the dedication is various kinds of precious materials or expensive materials. And that makes the sanctuary. Incidentally, it's from the work making the sanctuary that we learn the laws of Shabbat. The laws of Shabbat, what we are not allowed to do on Shabbat, is divided into 39 categories of work. And they are described by the sages as the 39 categories of work which went into making the sanctuary. So why is that the definition of the laws of Shabbat? Because our daily work, our lives, are making a sanctuary for God. But when it comes to Shabbat, the sanctuary is already made. On Shabbat, there is the sanctuary. There's a holy atmosphere in the home and around the person. So we don't have to make the sanctuary anymore. It's there. So for that reason, we don't do any of the 39 categories of work which go into making the sanctuary. So that links the sanctuary and Shabbat. At the beginning of this Sedra, Vayadaber Hashem el Moshe l'amor, God spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yikhu li, and let them take for me, that's the normal translation, Truma, a gift. Truma means a gift or an offering. Me'et kol ish, from every person, asher yidvenu libo, whose heart prompts him or prompts her, because the women were also involved. Tikhu et trumati, you should take my truma, my offering. V'zot ha-truma, and this is the offering, asher tikhu mi'itam, which you should take from them. And then comes a list, which in this verse, there's some of the things, zahav, v'chesev, u'nechoshet, gold, silver, and copper, u'tchelet, v'argaman, and blue wool, and purple wool, v'tola shani, and scarlet wool, v'sheish, and white linen, v'izim, and goat skins. So there is, and the list goes on, all kinds of things. So that's the beginning of the Sedra Truma, and that is the entry into the discourse that we're going to try to learn, which was said in 1975. And in fact, it was exactly the same day that we, it was a Tuesday evening, it's nearly the same day. It was a Tuesday evening, and that year, that was the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar. This year, it's the second, the third of Adar is Wednesday. But that's how it was in 1975. So this was a discourse said during the week, not on Shabbat. So there are probably recordings of this discourse that people made. And it has not been checked and published by the Rebbe, but the team of scholars have written it down and put pointing and put a commentary to it to help us understand it. So we'll begin with the melody of the discourse in order to try to get into its beautiful and subtle teachings. Oh ya ma ya 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 yo ya yum, oh ya ra ya ra yum ba mu, ya ma ya ya ba yum ba mu, Ha yere ram ba ya ba yom ba ho yere ram ba ho ha ya ya ba bam bam ho ho ya 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 ba bam bam ho ya ya ho ya bam bam. Okay, we're going to select. We're going to read selectively from the first paragraph, because it goes into a whole subtle discussion, which it would take too long to explore properly. So it begins, V'yikhu li truma me'et kolish. You should take for me a offering from every person, asher yidvenu libo, whose heart prompts him. Tikhu et trumati, you should take my offering. And then it goes on, v'zot ha-truma, this is the offering, asher tikhu mi'itam, which you should take from them. And it goes through counting the different things. And so there's a discussion, why does it say truma three times? It could have written it all in a much shorter way. It seems to be repeating this idea of the offering. This is that they should take for me an offering. This is the, and you know, it's sort of repeating this term. And so the sages explain that this is talking about three different kinds of offering. Now, at the end of this sort of long discussion, which is in chapter one, if we go over the page, we're jumping, we come to line 12 on the second page, on page Vav. Gam tzarich lahavin, we also have to understand, ma shematzinu dvar pele b'midrash, a surprising thing that we find in the Midrash, ala pasuk, on this verse, v'zot ha-truma asher tikhu, this is the offering that you should take, zahav v'chesev v'nechoshet, silver, gold, silver, and copper. And then it says in the Midrash, gold, keneged malchut Bavel, that corresponds to the kingdom of Babylon. Reisha de Dahava, the head of gold. Now, the head of gold is a reference to a dream by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the man who destroyed the first temple. And he brought many Jews in exile to Babylon. And among them, he decided to have a group of young Jewish boys brought up in the palace. Their rationale for this was that the Jews were clever. And since they're clever, if we bring them up in the palace and they learn the style of Babylonian life, they'll be a good think tank and help us to run the government properly. That was their rationale. It's in the book of Daniel. And Daniel, who's like the hero of that book, he was one of these boys. There's a whole business. They wouldn't eat the food in the palace because it wasn't kosher, and he insisted on eating vegetarian food. It's one of the concept of vegetarianism in the Bible is there in the book of Daniel with yeah. Daniel and his friends, like the more religious friends, you know, insisting on only eating vegetarian food. And so anyway, so then the king had a dream, and he was very, very upset about this dream for two reasons. One is that he'd had a very upsetting dream, and the second was he couldn't remember what the dream was. So he told his advisors and dream interpreters, you got to tell me what was my dream and what does it mean? So they said, Your Majesty, if you tell us what the dream is, we'll tell you what it means. But we don't know what dream you had. And everyone, and the king said, it's going to be off with your head, all of you, if you don't tell me what dream I had. And then they began thinking, you know, and they're all terribly upset. And Daniel meets one of these people. He said, well, you know, why are you so miserable? he says, well, there's this terrible thing that, you know, with the king and his dream. So Daniel said, God can interpret all dreams, you know, take me along. So they brought Daniel along to the king, and Daniel told him his dream. The dream was that he had a dream of a statue. The head of the statue was gold, the neck was silver, the chest was copper, or the middle with the torso was copper, and then it became iron, and then the feet were iron mixed with clay. It's become an English phrase, feet of clay, meaning instability. And then came a stone which smashed this statue, and it smashed into smithereens, and the stone grew and grew and grew and became a beautiful, peaceful mountain. So that was the dream. The king said, you're right, that's the dream. What is it? That's exactly what I dreamt. So what does it mean? So he says, Antu Resha Dadava, you, your majesty, you and your reign, you are the head of gold. In other words, the Babylonian kingdom. And after you will come another kingdom, which will be the silver kingdom. And then will be another kingdom, which will be the copper kingdom. And then will be another kingdom, the iron kingdom. And then it will be a time of instability. And then will come Mashiach. That's the stone which smashes the statue, changes the whole world order, and becomes a beautiful, peaceful mountain. So it's an image of the four stages of exile and the coming of Mashiach. So the Midrash links this to the gold and silver and copper which are being given as gifts to the sanctuary. So the Rebbe asks, how does that fit in to the concept of the sanctuary? Right. Okay. Now we're looking at chapter 2. Vayuvun be'er hadvarim, and we will understand what these things mean, the whole idea of giving these three kinds of offering. Through the what's explained in the teachings of Chassidut from the previous Rebbes. These three offerings which are being spoken about are really talking in general al shlosha inyanim, of the three concepts of Torah, Tfilah, u'mitzvah. Learning Torah, praying, and keeping mitzvot. You see, from the Hasidic point of view, everything which is in the Torah, even if it's talking about a specific event that happened thousands of years ago, and you know, here it's describing a part of our history, that when the Jewish people were camped at Mount Sinai, God gave them the command to build a sanctuary, and they built it in such and such a way. And then you have all kinds of like archaeologists and historians of structures, you know, like discussing it, you know, how does it fit in with this dating and that dating, and all kinds of things like that. But we are not looking at it as in just in terms of what happened in the past. Certainly that's what happened in the past. That is the history of the Jewish people. This sanctuary became the prototype of the temple in Jerusalem. When you look at the design, as described in the Book of Kings, the design of the temple in Jerusalem, it is clearly based on the design of this sanctuary. And then in the Book of Ezekiel, he describes there what the third temple is going to look like. We've had, there was one temple in Jerusalem, then it was destroyed. Then Ezra and Nehemiah came back and they built a second temple. Now, Ezekiel had already given a prophecy of what the future temple would look like. The problem was they didn't quite understand how to apply it. So they built something that's a mixture of Ezekiel's vision and what they remembered of the first temple. But ultimately, Mashiach will come and we will have the final temple, the third temple. So that is the concept of the temple. But in addition, there is the personal temple every single day of the year, because in fact, when it says in the Sedra that they should make a sanctuary for me and I will dwell within them, That really means that God is dwelling, the divine presence is dwelling inside each individual Jew, and he's dwelling in the fact that we serve God in our daily life. Person wakes up in the morning, and the first concept is a relationship with God. A relationship with God. And there are all kinds of ways in which, from the very beginning of our first waking moments, this relationship with God is expressed. So, for example, could you possibly pass me a siddur, please? Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Now, one of the first things, or the first thing, that a person does, having opened their eyes in the morning, is that there's a little prayer, Moda Ani. Moda Ani Lefanecha. I thank before you, Melech Chai V'Kayam, King who lives and exists, Shehechezata Bi Nishmati. I thank you for giving me back my soul, Bechemla, with mercy. You okay? Rabbi Munatecha, great is your faithfulness. Now that little prayer is the beginning of what we do in the morning, connecting with God. And you notice it doesn't have the name of God in it, because we're able to say this prayer even before we wash our hands. Many people have, next to their bed, a bowl with a thing of water. And so the first thing they do in the morning, they pick it up and pour three times alternatively over each hand to purify oneself from sleep. Because sleep is a 60th part of death. And when we're asleep, this sort of negative quality is there. And then when we wake up, the negativity flees to our fingers. And by washing our hands three times, we purify ourselves from that. So, Moda Ani can be said even before we wash our hands, and it is said before we wash our hands, because it represents this connection of the individual to God. Beyond the question of pure or impure, we've always got that profound connection with God. Now, the point is here that this service, this relationship with God, which begins right at the beginning of the morning and goes all the way through to going to sleep at night, when the custom is to say the Shema before going to sleep. So that's like, you know, we're connecting with God in all kinds of different ways during the day. And there's those two points, one the first thing in the morning, and the other the saying the Shema last thing at night. And then in between, there's study of Torah, there is prayer perhaps in a more organized way, like saying the daily prayers, and there's doing mitzvot, different kinds of good deeds. That is the life of an individual, and everything else that we do, whether it's earning money, recreation, a hobby, it all fits into that framework of a connection with the divine. And it's all being used in a positive way so that the recreation, the earning money and the hobby and anything else we might do, that all becomes part of a connection between the person and God. And so therefore this sanctuary and the offerings for the sanctuary is all part of the individual's relationship with the divine. Now this concept of those three dimensions, Torah, study of Torah, Tfilah, prayer, and mitzvot, Shehem, that's line 24, Shloshah Amudim, they are the three pillars, which it says in Ethics of the Fathers, that these are the three pillars that the world stands on, and the way it puts it there is Torah, Avodah. Now, Avodah means the offering of the sacrifices, the offerings in the temple. And the offerings in the temple correspond to our prayer. Because when we pray to God, it is like an offering to God. We are giving ourselves over to God at that moment, those few moments of the prayer, like bringing an offering in the temple. And Gmilut Chasadim and all the mitzvot, in general, that we do. And the mitzvot are called chesed, kindness, because generally we do the mitzvot with the right hand. Like if there's something that we do, a right-handed person does it with the right hand, like you should whatever it is that one is doing as a mitzvah, like, for example, giving charity. You put a charity box on the table, a person wants to give a few pennies in charity, it's a good idea for them to take the money with their right hand, and with their right hand, they put the money in the charity box. Now, why right? Because the right hand represents chesed, represents kindness. And so that quality of kindness, that is what all mitzvot represent. So there's a sense in which all the mitzvot are an expression of kindness. All right, so now we're on the last line of this page, Vav. Va'al pizeh yuvan, and according to this, we can understand be'o ha'shaychut shel tchumat ha'mishkan. We can understand the connection of the truma, the offering in the sanctuary, le'inan ha'galiot, with the idea of exile. Why the whole concept of exile? Because since the Trumat HaMishkan, the offering in the sanctuary, he connected in Yana Mitzvah, corresponds to the Mitzvah, he's going to explain this. So we're going to see the connection. Obviously, the crucial thing is that of the mitzvot, part of that, or the tefillah, is the idea of the avodah, the bringing of offerings. And the bringing of offerings is something that was interrupted by the fact of there being exile. So there is a sense in which it's the exile which is interrupting this process, which is really supposed to take place in a total way. But now we're going to go back to the way in which the individual has a relationship with the divine. And this is the main part of this discourse. Let's understand it. Ba'inyin b'zeh. Now, what this means is as follows. Dihine klalut ha'chiluk bein Torah, on the one hand, tefillah and mitzvot is. What's the difference between Torah, prayer, and mitzvot? She'Torah hi hamshacha milamayla lamata. Torah is drawing something down from above to below. You see, when we pray to God, we're reaching to God from below upwards. When we do mitzvah, we are using material things in this world to serve God, like we're cooking food in the kitchen, and we're careful to keep the laws of kashrut. So it's something which takes place on the material level of the food that we have and how we cook it in the kitchen. Torah, on the other hand, like here we're studying Torah together, Torah is something which is extremely spiritual. Comes from a spiritual realm and beyond understanding, and it comes down into our understanding that we're able to read it and discuss it, and it's something which is coming from above to below, and it's as if God is giving himself to us. Now on line 7 it says Dodi li, my beloved is to me. You see, there is a phrase in the Song of Songs, I am to my beloved. And then it goes on, and my beloved is to me. That's right. In fact, Ani l'dodi v'dodi li roshei tevot elu. Right? This makes the word elu, which is the month before Rosh Hashanah. You're quite right. Now, I am to my beloved, is us, is man reaching for God. My beloved is to me, is God reaching for man. Right? So we have those two movements. So prayer and doing mitzvah can be understood as me reaching, each one of us reaching to my beloved, which means God. I'll put a capital B. But my beloved is to me, that's Torah. which comes from God as a message to us. Now, it's a very interesting question. Is this a general message or an individual message? So, there's revelation of God, which you could see as something, well, it's very general. You know, the Torah is there, was given thousands of years ago, or even if you add in that the chain of teachers from Moses to the present, so each one of them is teaching Torah, but I'm just one individual person among thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. Is this Torah really mine? Is it really for me? In what sense is it mine? It's a general thing, a person might think. But the sages tell us that when the Torah was given, it was given in such a way that each of the 600,000 people who were there at Mount Sinai heard the Torah in their own way. Each individual, till today, has got their own unique path in the Torah. And the challenge is finding that individual path. It says this in the introduction to Tanya. It speaks about the way that each individual has their own individual path in Torah, and the question is finding one's individual path in Torah. Now, a person might feel that this Torah teaching that I'm studying, whichever one it is, it might be the Sedra of the week, it might be a Hasidic teaching, it might be Mishnah, Talmud, Code of Law, whatever it might be, you know who it's speaking to? Me. You feel, you find yourself in the Torah. And that's something extremely important, to be able to discover oneself in the Torah. So there's a sense in which this discourse is skating around this concept as well. Now, so the Torah is a flow from above to below. Line 7, Dodi li, my beloved is to me. God gives himself to me through the Torah. The question is whether we can hear, whether we hear it in that way. Someone can speak to us with great love, but we didn't hear it. We didn't hear it properly. We thought they were just reading a poem. We didn't realize that the poem was to us and it was an expression of their intense love for us. So the Torah is God saying to us, I love you, and calling each one of us individually. God says, on my words like fire. And that means even the way the Torah is below, harihi dvori. It's my word, it's God's sacred word, Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of the Holy One, blessed be He. And therefore, Torah is always pure. Ma esh eino mekabel tuma, just as fire cannot be defiled in any way, so divrei Torah einan mekablin tuma, so also words of Torah can't receive impurity. Now, what does that mean? There are a number of different ways of understanding it. One is, the Torah can talk about every aspect of life. Torah can go, I mean, in the Talmud, you find all kinds of, you know, possible things that people might get up to, which would make the news of the world, you know, greedy to get the story. It's all there in the Talmud. You know, whatever people have been doing over the thousands of years, it's all a possibility, and whatever it is, if it's good or bad, there is a Torah ruling. You know, is this the good thing to do? Is it a bad thing to do? If someone did it, then what next? You know, so how do you proceed from now? That's you know, if a woman had a relationship with a person who's forbidden to her, like a non-Jew, in theory, she is, ideally, she's not then supposed to marry a Kohen. But what about if she had a lesbian relationship? Or she slept with an animal? Is she allowed to marry a Kohen? Yes, she can. So you know, the Talmud will explore, you know, these kind of things. And that's part of Torah. That's part of Torah teaching. Is that behavior good behavior? No, it's not good behavior. It's wrong. But what is the law about it? Okay, so then you can explain the law. Does it mean she's forbidden to her husband? No. It goes into the details. So Torah does not acquire impurity. So Torah could be talking about anything. So they used to have cinema letters showing who the film is for. You know, is it U, which is for everyone, A, which is only for adults, or X, which is only for the hardy. You know, now I think everything starts with X, but they have some other way of doing it. But the Torah can be an X film, but nonetheless, that is Torah. It is talking about life and existence and the things that people get up to, and what is the halacha about it. Now that's Torah. Then we have Inyan Ha'avodah, that's line 12. Service of God, that's korbanot, the offerings in the temple, tefillah, prayer. Now the idea of a korban, of an offering, hu rak la'acharei shemakdishim oto. In order to bring an offering, let's say we wanted to bring an offering of some wheat flour and make it into a kind of pancake and bring it to the temple as a korban mincha, as a flour offering. Now, first of all, you have to sanctify it. You have to say, this flour is going to be an offering to God in the temple. You have to make sure it's pure, and then you make it holy. It's not the way the world is on its own. It's after the world has already been elevated a bit. So that's how you bring this flower offering. And similarly with prayer. With prayer, we're rising higher than ordinary worldliness. She'inyana, what is the concept of prayer? The dream of Jacob. Sulam mutzav atza. A ladder standing on the ground. V'rosho magia hashamayma. And the head of the ladder reaches the heavens. So the ladder is reaching upwards, and what is happening in prayer? We're going away from that world of all the complex, problematic things that there might be. We are focusing on something spiritual and something holy. And those few minutes while we're praying, we're just thinking about holy, well, trying to think about only a kind of a holy realm. We're trying to separate ourselves from the news, and this thing happened, and that thing happened, and we're trying to get into a more holy frame of mind and to realize something which is beyond material and physical issues where people get up to the things that might be described in the Talmud. We're going into a more sacred realm. Now then we have, on the other hand, Masha'en kein inyana mitzvah. Then we have the practical mitzvah. Now with practical mitzvah, we're back in the physical world. Harezeh dafka bidvarim gashmim. You keep the mitzvah with physical things. Tfilin biklaf gashmi. A man puts on tfilin. And incidentally, when the man puts on tfilin, that counts for his wife as well. So that the fact that the man wears tfilin, that is counting for his wife. And if you're talking about a young person who isn't married, the tefillin that a young man puts on is for his wife-to-be, whom he might never have met, but they're going to become one person together, one soul together. And at the moment, he's putting on tefillin on her account, only they don't know each other necessarily. But that interaction is still taking place. So the tefillin are on physical parchment, physical leather. Tzitzit betzemer gashmi. Tzitzit, the talit, is made with physical wool. V'chayotze bazeh, and similarly, b'chol ha-mitzvot, with all the mitzvot of the Torah, there is something physical. Now, then he goes on in a kind of a long interpolation in brackets on this page above, this page 6, between lines 20 to 28, about feelings. You see, there's a mitzvah to love God. So how can you speak of that as being something physical? But the point is that love of God is felt in a physical way within the person. It's felt in physical terms. And so it somehow or other, it is also within our physical frame. Now, because the mitzvot are in physicality, let's go on to line 28. V'zeu gam atam, this is also the reason. Shedavka mitzvot heim b'midida v'hagbala. The mitzvot are defined. They have a specific definition. We're coming towards Pesach. So so on Pesach, we've got to drink 4 glasses of wine. Could be great truce. And eat a certain amount of matzah. Now, when you say a glass of wine, how much do you mean? Do you mean a big tumbler full of wine? Do you mean a thimble full of wine? So the sages give a measure. So the one measure is 86 cc, 86 milliliter is a glass of wine. So that's quite a small glass, but one's supposed to drink most of the glass. So if one does that 4 times at the 4 points in the Seder, one has fulfilled that aspect of the laws of the Seder. And how much matzah should one eat? Well, what do you consider eating? If you eat 1 crumb every 5 minutes over an hour, you know, is that considered eating? No, we're supposed to eat, let's say it's an ounce of matzah within a relatively small space of time. Let's say 4 minutes. There's the 4-minute mile, right? I was brought up under the shadow of Roger Bannister with the 4-minute mile. So now there's the 4-minute matzah.
How much is an ounce?
Well, if you get the big shmura matzah,
28 grams,
then half of that.
Right.
So half a big shmura matzah in 4 minutes.
28 grams. Yeah. 28 grams,
isn't
it?
Yeah, 28 grams. Yeah. 31.9 troy ounces. Yeah. I mean, the thing, you know, it's often spoken about in how much it looks. Because, So in other words, the mitzvot are defined. Top of page chet, Mashe'en kein la Torah, but Torah, hi lemailu mibidida v'hagbala. Torah is something beyond measure. It's like infinite how many books of Torah there might be. You know, there are so many thousands and thousands of books of Torah teachings now. That's in a few years' time, there might be, you know, twice as many. If, you know, people have time to write books, so they'll write more. So, or about all kinds of interesting things. Kamo shekatuv, as it's written, Aruka me'eretz midah urechava mini yam. It's describing the Torah in a verse. It's broad, it's longer than the earth, it's broader than the sea. Like, you know, as if you like spread out the Torah teachings, it just goes on and on and on, it's more and more and more. You could it says there's 70 faces of Torah. So each word of Torah you could examine, as it were, in 70 different ways, you know, and look at it like 70 different pathways, and each one will teach something else. So it's infinite. And Shaharei Tefillah B'Tachlit HaShleimut, now prayer, when it's the way it's supposed to be, Hi Ba'ofen D'Rosho Magia HaShamayma, is like the ladder where the head of the ladder reaches the heavens. Now in the Shema, it says you should love God. You should love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. And all your might is described as a total way of giving oneself over to God, that you're ready to do anything for God. You know, that's the sages write, there's a commentary in the Shulchan Aruch by Rabbi Joseph Caro, so there's a commentary there that says, a person could think to themselves, if I had to jump into a fire and give my life for God, I would do that. So that a sense of total dedication to God. And or you see, we got these different levels of prayer. There are basically, there's the steps leading up to the Shema. Those are like mostly psalms. And it's like going up steps higher and higher. Then there's special blessings before the Shema. And that's like an even higher level. And then there's the Shema at the top. And that's something very exalted. And then there's the Amidah. So in the Shema, we feel this tremendous dedication to God. And in the Amidah, we feel totally selfless. Like, we're just absorbed in the divine. In fact, at the beginning of the Amidah, there's a little phrase, it's really a verse, and it says, Lord, open my lips, and my mouth will declare your praise. Now, that little phrase, you see, Hashem sfatai tiftach, Ufi yagid tehilatecha. Lord, open my lips and my mouth will declare your praise. Why do we say that? One explanation is, it's as if the person is inert. And it's God who is making the person's lips work. We've come to this like spiritual point of absorption in the divine. And after that, after the Amidah, we're sort of climbing back to the world again. We come back to earth. And ordinary life. So this is the process of prayer, and that can be every single day. The person spends a few minutes praying. You know, some people pray in 5-10 minutes, some people pray in 45 minutes, whatever it is. But that process of prayer is like an experience. It's like a journey. And it's a journey from worldliness, and then going higher and higher and higher, and then into the Shema, which is dedication, the Amidah, which is complete absorption. And then we come from that, and bringing blessings into the world, because in the Amidah, the text of the Amidah is about God blessing the Jewish people and the world in various ways. Bless for us this year, that it should be a good year. Heal the sick, forgive our sins. All these blessings pouring to us. This is a beautiful experience. Every single day, you could pay hundreds of pounds to therapists, you wouldn't get the same. So that's something which is very, very beautiful.
A few weeks ago, I remember you talked about this sequence, and you gave it the names, I think, of fear and love.
Remember. Oh yeah, that was a fascinating thing, the discourse, we were looking at it.
Yeah. What was
the sequence? The sequence is the initial awe of God, the basic awe of God, and then a first level of love, and then a higher level of love, and then an ultimate level of awe of God, which is the awe of the exaltation of God, so that which is in the Amidah. So that's the initial level, the first level of love, the higher level of love, and then the higher level of awe. I think it was that. Yeah. So these are very subtle and very beautiful experiences that a person is able to experience every day. And this is our relationship with the divine. This is really how we're making the sanctuary in our heart and how we're making the sanctuary in the world. Now, when a person is in this spiritual mood, this is line 8, whether of the Shema or of the Amidah, shehu hefech mimitziyut ha'olam. It's the opposite of worldliness. In worldliness, the person is very much here in the world. And we were talking about driving before. You know, how do you turn right, you know, in England? You know, how do you turn right? You've got to, like, see how the cars are coming and find the little gap that you're going to go into. And because you're going, the other guy has to put his brakes on. And so, you know. So there you are in the world. Whereas in the Shema and the Amida, you're beyond. I heard that there's a certain company that they instruct their drivers, never, like in England, never turn right at a crossing, always go left, even if it means going a few miles more, because in that way it's a much calmer experience driving. So it's interesting that worldliness is where you are forced to turn right various times, and then you get into a more spiritual thing where you're never taking that problematic turn, and you're just going for a spiritual level after level. V'rach inyana mitzvot, but only the concept of the mitzvot, hu b'midida v'hagbala. Now you see, then you come to do a mitzvah, you're going to make Pesach. Making Pesach, well, let's start with Purim, which is less anxiety provoking. psychologists like examining life in the Jewish community, you know, they talk about life events. So life events are like serious events which can lead to all kinds of different things. Pesach is a life event. Because it's... But let's take Purim, which is less worrying. But still, in order to carry out Purim properly, and Bezrav Hashem, we're going to have a Purim party here, mm-hmm. Saturday night, 8:30, and with the help of Hashem, there'll be the Megillah read here around just a bit after 9, something like that. Mm-hmm. And be very nice if you can manage to come. So Purim, you know, you have to get organized. One of the things about Purim, first of all, is hearing the Megillah. You know, where am I going to hear the Megillah? That's, you know, finding a place to hear the Megillah. Okay, one solution is go to the synagogue. But which synagogue? This, that, the other. And getting that all organized. Then another aspect of Purim is Mishloach Manot, which means sending gifts of food to a friend. Hopefully, on Saturday night, I'll have these little packets, little baskets with, some biscuits and drink or something like that. So you have one of those, and on Purim day, if you give that to another person, you fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, of giving of gifts. And another thing to do on Purim is to give charity. So to give two different people charity, and also to have a Purim Seuda, to take part in a meal of Purim. So all these are aspects of enjoying Purim. Now, what it's enjoying Purim, and it's keeping the mitzvot of Purim, and it's in the practical world. So you need a physical Su'uda, physical Purim meal, and there at that meal, you know, so the meal has to be cooked, has to be organized, going to be in this place or that place. So that's coming back into the practical world. When you're saying the Shema and the Amidah, you're in another realm altogether. It's beyond food or anything. You're at that moment, you're in the spiritual realm. The ladder is reaching up to heaven. And so that's where you are, somewhere on that ladder. You know, you might feel you're at the beginning of the ladder, but wherever you are, you're on a ladder which reaches up to heaven. Whereas when you come to mitzvah, you're dealing in the physical world. So there we have these different dimensions of our service of God. Torah study, which is like this beautiful stream of teaching and of wisdom and, you know, fascinating discussions coming down from Mount Sinai to us with all kinds of explanations by the sages about every aspect of life. And then we have prayer, which takes us out of life, in a sense, back towards heaven, so that it's as if we're on Mount Sinai. We've climbed up the mountain. And then there's mitzvah, where we are in the physical world, making the physical world into a sacred domain. We're making the physical world into a sanctuary, so that the whole world is a sanctuary. It's as if we are constructing the Garden of Eden. You see, we were in the Garden of Eden, which was a little patch, so to speak, and outside was a big wide world. We were driven out of the Garden of Eden in order to make the whole big wide world into a Garden of Eden. And that's how it will be with the coming of the Messiah, the coming of Mashiach. All right, so now we come back to the Midrash, which compares the gold and silver and so on of the offerings to make the sanctuary with the process of exile. The statue of gold and of silver and of bronze. Va'alpid, so this is on page Chet, line 60. Va'alpid ze yuvan maima midrash. According to this, we can understand the teaching of the midrash. Ala pasuk, on the verse, v'zot hatruma asher tikhu. This is the offering which you should take. Zahav v'chesev v'nuchoshet, gold and silver and copper. Zahav keneged malchut Bavel. Gold corresponds to the kingdom of Babylon. And so on. And each of the other metals represent another kingdom. And the final kingdom, the fourth kingdom, is the kingdom of Rome. And we see ourselves as in that same Roman exile. Ki be'inyan ha-galut, because in terms of exile, mudgash biyoter inyan ha-chomriyut, materiality is particularly stressed. And materiality is like the lowest dimension of the material. Va'alkol panim, and at least inyan ha-gashmiyut shaba'olam, at least the physical side of the world. Now, using these two words, physical and material, it's as if the physical is what we need, and the material is what we indulge in. So there's two sides to our life. You know, there's what we need, and then there's indulgence. And indulgence can drag us down lower and lower and lower. Whereas what we need, okay, so a person has to eat, we have to procreate, we have to do this, we have to do that. That's part of life. But then there are levels of indulgence which get into the newspaper and are more and more problematic. Shebezet tzricha liyot avodat ha'adam. This is what the service of an individual has to be. La'asot lo yitbarach dira betachtonim, to make for God a dwelling in the lower world. V'lechein shayach inyan ze l'tchumat ha-mishkan, and that's why this relates to the offering of the sanctuary. Shekae al inyan ha-mitzvot, because the sanctuary is about our doing mitzvot. Sha'afilu bizman shebeit hamikdash ha'ikayim, even at the time the temple stood, ha'ikayin mitzvot, the main thing with mitzvot was binyanim gashmim dafka, was with physical things. The mishkan, the sanctuary, the temple, represents the dwelling of God in the physical world. And that's what the mitzvot are, being in the physical world. And the link that the Rebbe is making here is that the way that exile is a time when we focus on physicality. So it's almost as if exile is being taken in its most positive sense, that we're in exile in a physical world, and physical things are very important to us. Let's make out of those physical things a dwelling for God. Let's make a sanctuary with our physical lives. Now, then we have a very interesting see, it's got this phrase. V'yikhu li truma. This is line 28 on page Chet. Take for me an offering. And after that it says, Trumati, my offering. They're like different levels in relation to God. In fact, in Tanya, in chapter 47 of Tanya, it says, V'yikhu li, take me. God says to us, take me. When we do a mitzvah, when we pray to God, we're actually taking God. God is, as it were, offering to embrace us. And all we have to do is respond to that invitation. And so there we have the Shema, for example, and we can say the Shema, and at that moment, it's as if God welcomes each individual, and we can just be in this embrace with God in the most wonderful way. So that is explained in the Zohar on these words, V'yikhu li truma, take for me an offering. And the Zohar explains it means, take me, and also bring an offering. That's another thing. But first of all, focus on, take me, God says to us. Now, so we're talking here about a kind of a spiritual dimension of connection with the divine. I think let's move on to page Yud.
Page Yud.
Page Yud. Yeah, we're skipping. Yeah. Now, we've heard a little bit about prayer and a little bit about mitzvot, the way the mitzvot, you see, in prayer, we are coming close to God. And in the mitzvot, we are making a divine realm by fulfilling the mitzvot in our daily lives, making a home where there's mezuzot on the doors and kashrut of food and so on. And now we come to another dimension of the three trumot. You see, the three kinds of gift are Torah and prayer and mitzvah. So let's have a look at Torah. V'zeh v'yikhu li truma, that they should take for me an offering. Shegam avodat Torah, the service of Torah, nikret b'shem truma, is called an offering. Now, in which way? First of all, we have the word truma. It's a very interesting word. It's the word Torah with a mem. Right? You see, that's the word Torah. Now, and then we have an extra mem. Right, once it's exactly the Taf, the Resh, the Vav, the Hey, and then we add a Mem, so we got Truma. So here we have Torah, and here we have Teruma. So here we're looking at the connection between the Torah that we study and the Truma, the offering, the connection, the elevation, the being connected with God. Now, line 8. Now, why is it Torah Mem? The Koya la Torah, it's talking about the Torah, Shenitna la Abaim Yom, which was given in 40 days. See, because Moshe was on the mountain 40 days. That's where he was taught the whole Torah, and that's what we study. And he was taught the whole Torah that would ever be studied through all the generations. So even what we're studying now was learned by Moshe in the 40 days of Mount Sinai. So Torah and Mem 40 is the nature of Torah, and that's why it's called Truma, the offering. One of the offerings in the sanctuary. Ve'od zot, and a further point. Shebet Truma yesh shnei perushim. There are two aspects to Truma. Now, the normal word Truma, let's just think for a moment. A farmer has farmed his field and he's now got 100 sacks of grain. Now, truma actually means a gift that the farmer has to give to the priest, to the Kohen. which basically it's a bit fluid how much you should give, but let's say it's a 50th. He could give a 40th, he could give more, he could give a 60th, could give less. But let's say he's giving 2 sacks of grain to the Kohen. So one way of doing this is he says, he goes up to the sacks, the 2 sacks. He says, behold, these 2 sacks are truma. And he lifts it up, maybe he says a blessing, and he takes it, and there is a nearby Kohen, and he gives it to Mr. Kohen, and there he's taken truma. Now, that is called harama. That's actually lifting it up and carrying it away. The other way is umilishon hafrasha. This is line 11. Now, hafrasha means he separates truma, but he doesn't actually do anything. He's got the pile of sacks. He says, those 2 sacks on the top left-hand corner, that's truma. He's designated it, but the sacks are still there. It's just that now he knows that they are truma. So now both of these are the kind of offering. On the one hand, the offering is still there as part of the 100 sacks that he's got in his granary. The other level is he's carried them away and they're very clearly distinct and he's given them to the Kohen. Now, the Rebbe uses this idea in this discourse. How we study Torah. So let's look at line 23. Ushnei inyanim elu. Now, these two concepts, these two different ways of separating truma, yeshnam gam b'Torah, also apply to Torah study. Dehine, because behold, when we learn Torah in a kind of ideal way, azay magim, then we come levasof, eventually, often in such a way of limud haTorah lishma, learning Torah for its own sake, for the sake of God, l'shem haTorah, for the sake of Torah itself. V'hainu, and that means shemechaber oraita b'kudsh b'richu. As it says in a certain Kabbalistic book, he joins the Torah with God. Now, this is a very, very exalted idea in Kabbalistic teachings. We have God the Infinite. We have the Torah. And we have the world. Right? And then we have, in the middle, we have the person. And the person connects the Torah to God. Now that is a very fascinating way of thinking about it, that this is really a very special kind of person. His or her learning is on such an exalted level that they are connecting the Torah to God. Because the Torah is God communicating through great people like Moses, or in the Talmud, Rabbi this, Rabbi Akiva. It's very, very great people. And these are the people who are making this link, as it were, between Torah, that it's not just a book, it's not just fascinating philosophy or interesting ideas. It's actually godliness which is there. And it's because the person who is such a sacred person and has opened up the holiness in his or her heart, that's why the Torah teaching is something which is really an expression of the divine. Now that's a very, very exalted way of learning Torah, and that represents the truma, where you take the 2 sacks in your arms and you carry them away. I mean, they're away from the world. They're absolutely like they're up Mount Sinai. The sacks of grain have gone up to Mount Sinai. But then there's the other way of learning Torah, which is that the person learns Torah, if we look at the bottom line of the page, Shezeo b'tchilat halimud, at the beginning of study, Shehalibud hu adaita de nafshi. The learning of Torah is the person himself or herself is learning Torah in their own style, their own way, their own particular personal pathway in the Torah, where it's almost as if the Torah is not so much telling me about God, it's telling me about me, it's telling me who I am, it's my life, it's opening up doors of my own inner perception of who I am. Now, it's a very interesting phrase that the sages tell us, that at the beginning the Torah is called the Torah of God, but then when you study it a bit more, it's called your Torah, your own Torah. And that means that the person studies in such a way, it becomes my Torah, it becomes my story. Is this a story about Moses and the Israelites thousands of years ago, or is it my story? I once had a very, very moving experience. A colleague of mine, a friend of mine, he introduced me to two reformed alcoholics. And the idea was that they would come to my house and we would study Torah together. So it happened to be just this time of year, shortly before Pesach. So, or like a few weeks ahead, you know, after Purim, before Pesach. So I said to them, I think my wife was away, so that's why they had to come to my house, rather than me going to them.
Purim wasn't a good time for them.
So we're reading the Haggadah about Pesach, and like the whole idea of Pesach. And I was trying to give the explanation that Mitzrayim, Egypt, is limitation, and it's that the person is like crushed in some very limiting negative thing, and then they break out of that negative thing and they're free. And one turns to the other and says, "This is our story," which is a very moving moment. But in fact, that is the whole Torah. The Torah is our story. So that is the other way of separating the truma, that the two sacks of grain are still there in your granary, but you've made them truma, and they are holy, and they're connected with God, but at the same time, they're fully part of your life, your daily life as well. And so here we have the three kinds of truma, whether it's study of Torah, or prayer, or keeping of mitzvah. And each one of them is the way in which we each help to make our own, we each make our own personal sanctuary in our heart and in the world. L'chaim.